the reality would be that a lot more people would talk about it than it would actually change anything in the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. At the restaurant, I had always been the confident leader, that whether the decision was right or wrong, I stuck with it and I saw it through and we made it right.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the Smokeless Podcast. Nick here from Stanley's Famous Pit Barbecue in Tyler, Texas. Wayne and Justin will be back in the next episode. This week, we're bringing you a couple of our favorite conversations from the archive, and they both hit on something every pitmaster knows all too well, and that is pressure. First up today, Evan Leroy talks about the reality of running one of the most talked about barbecue restaurants in Texas, from the freedom that comes with trusting your team to pushing the boundaries of what Texas barbecue can be to the pressure of holding a Michelin star. This is a conversation about what it really takes to keep evolving without losing sight of where you came from. After that, we've got Arnis Robbins from Evie Mays talking about stress, survival, and the lengths pitmasters will go to just to keep their head straight. Some people take up golf, some people go fishing. Arnis learned to fly an airplane. So yeah, we've got Michelin stars, restaurant pressure, new school barbecue, and pitmasters literally taking to the skies. These are stories that come from well beyond the pits. And let's get into it with Evan Leroy.
This year, I'm kind of preparing everybody for the fact that I'm going to be gone longer, I think, than I have ever before, just because of this book tour. It's not going to be all one time, like a few weekends here and there, but it'll still be busy times, like weekends when I won't be there. And there's still just like little things and little times when it's like a judgment call of whether, you know, or not to fire more burgers or something. And that's going to determine, you know, if the night goes very well or if the night does not go very well. And it's like really trying to train them to kind of like focus in on those little details and make the right decision at the right time.
Is there going to be any cooking on the book tour, or is it strictly just going to be, you know, Q&A and talking about what's going on?
Yeah, I would say much like everything else we do, non-traditional book tour. We're going to have a few stops that are pretty just kind of traditional as far as signing, you know, and like that's it. But most of them are going to be at our friends' restaurants or something that has like a food element to it. We're going to be capturing a bunch of content as we do that too, to post on social media and YouTube and stuff. So really want to take this opportunity to just like, you know, push this as much as we can and get as many eyes on it as possible. Mm-hmm.
Does that include cooking in a fireplace in Ireland?
Oh man, maybe not this year, but I definitely hope I get to do that again. That was so awesome. That was
all right. So yeah, you're in a castle in Ireland cooking in a fireplace. That sounds insane. So like what's going on there? What happened?
Well, we went to Ireland for the Big Grill. The Big Grill is like a big barbecue festival in Ireland, and then it's in Dublin, and then I was going to Meatopia in the UK like a week later, but we had a few days to kill. So when I say we, it was myself, it was Brad Robinson, aka Chud's Barbecue, his business partner Nick, and then our very good friend Matt James, who is a private chef but has a lot of really good experience and is a great chef in his own right. And so four of us went to Dublin, did the Big Grill. Then we went to Galway, or kind of Western Ireland, because this castle was like a really good deal. It's not that far of a drive, just like straight across. I think it's like just a couple hours straight across Ireland. And then we, you know, checked into this ancient castle, like the stone walls are like this thick. And it was just a really cool experience. We were able to go into Galway and, you know, hooked up with a butcher. And while we were in Dublin, we got connected with Higgins Butchers too, who is just like one of the best meat cutters in all of Ireland. And so we were able to like take a bunch of meat over there. There was a pond on the property, so we were able to pull out some pike. And they have this massive fireplace, and we just lit it up and started cooking in there, started grilling in there. It's just one of the coolest experiences that I've had. It was like rainy and dark and cold and windy outside. We're just sitting in there sipping on the Guinness and some Irish whiskey. And like, it was, I mean, what else do I have to say? It was so awesome.
That sounds incredible.
It was a very good time. Yeah. And then we got hooked up with Rob Walsh, the barbecue writer and multiple James Beard Award winner. He lives in Ireland now. And so the day after that, he like took us on a oyster tour and like took us all around, and we hung out at his place and cooked with him. And he's just a total badass as well. So that's certainly an unforgettable trip.
It's hard to believe barbecue was the avenue by which you live this life, isn't it?
I know. It's
isn't
crazy.
The so least insane. Likely of all yeah. cuisines to make that happen?
I would think so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, what the heck are we doing like off on some fascist like some castle in Ireland, like cooking barbecue? It's kind of crazy. There's not a post oak tree to be found for kilometers.
So what was in the fireplace?
Just like big steaks and fish and or what wood? Oh, I have no idea what was in there. Probably a Duraflame log.
Trimming some rose bushes.
Yeah. With some resinous conifers just thrown off. A bunch of sap. Who knows?
I get a pit tour one time and somebody asked me what kind of wood we cooked with, and I told them it was crepe myrtle.
Yeah.
Everybody's notes.
Pressure treated pine.
It's oak. We finish with crepe myrtle.
Yeah.
My stupidest response ever, and I know you guys get tired of hearing me say it, but they always say, what kind of wood do you use? Well, morning. It's very plentiful, and it's a renewable resource, and just a lot of times people get it, and some people they don't. They're just like, morning wood. Okay.
Renewable resource.
feel free to use that anytime, everybody.
That's so good. Great note. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, Justin's writing down. He's taking notes right now.
So tell me, right. with the success of the restaurant and the book coming out, have you given any thoughts at all to a second location or maybe another concept of some kind, live fire perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't really ever want to do another Leroy and Lewis. We learned a lot of lessons. This restaurant's too difficult to run as one place, let alone two. I like that it's a single spot. I'd like to keep it a single spot. I think it's like the kind of magic that we're trying to create there, I think is only kind of able to be harnessed in that one area. But yeah, I have a lot of other ideas that I'd like to explore. I'd like to elevate even more. I'd like to do something, you know, very intimate and small and focused and like still kind of really trying to push some more boundaries on barbecue. and then I'd really like to do some kind of Mexican barbecue thing, and not just like Tex-Mex barbecue, but like Mexican barbecue thing. Cause where I go to, you know, some Mexican restaurants, Tex-Mex restaurants, and they have, you know, carnes de libro, and it's picadillo, it's carnitas, it's barbacoa, it's chorizo. And we have some of those things on our menu now, but I think it'd be cool if like a barbecue menu read like taco meats and they were all like smoked and come on a big tray with all kinds of salsas and tortillas and stuff. So maybe one day.
Well, back to pushing the boundaries of barbecue. What does that look like? You know, it's when we talk to Daniel or David, sorry, David Vaughn, that's who we talk to, right? David
Vaughn. Yep. That's him. You know, that's the only place in the book it's misspelled is right on that first page.
Well, David was telling us that, you know, barbecue is evolving and we all see it's got to go that way. You know, it seems like it's harder to find a place with bad brisket now than it used to be. But to you, what is pushing the boundary of that look like? Is it more weird offcuts, or is it just, I guess, the recipes like you're talking now about different kinds of tacos? What's your thought there? How are you going to push the boundary even more?
Well, the way that I answer, I kind of used to answer this question a couple of years ago. I used to say that it would become more like the craft brewing space. And, you know, if you like, it wasn't that long ago that not every little city had a craft brewery. Now a bunch of little towns have craft breweries. And then the big cities have like niche breweries. They'll have a German brewery, a sour brewery, and all this stuff. Now a lot of those places are closing too.
Yeah.
as far as barbecue goes, I think it'll probably be slightly more nichified as far as the cuisine goes. And then I think we'll see some people playing with the format. Like, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see like a small plates barbecue restaurant, like really kind of a new American thing, like in a larger Texas or non-Texas city. I wouldn't be, you know, you've got Kareem who's doing Egyptian barbecue. That's not a, not like a culture you find a lot of in Texas or Austin, Texas. You know, it's not German or it's not Mexican. So I think you'll start to see those cultures that are not directly linked to Texas, still get kind of get their feet wet with some barbecue. You've got Smoke and Ashes doing Ethiopian. So I think that's the kind of stuff that we'll see.
How mindful are you about the legacy of like old school barbecue? It, you know, the further you evolve, does that mean you almost lose the legacy in the history, or is it just time that there's going to be people doing the old school thing? But I feel like we need people like you who are going to push, and people might push back on what that legacy is. I mean, it's always going to be ingrained, but I don't know. I know I'm asking a question, but at the same time, I'm kind of answering it out loud while I'm talking. I just, you know, I think it's important, and I certainly appreciate, and I guess everyone else does, that you are pushing the boundary. I think it's important for us to all be able to see that, oh, we can step out. We can do something different. You know, how many people started doing beef cheek as soon as they're like, oh, Evan LeRoy's doing beef cheek. So fucking everybody's now beef cheek is everywhere. But the legacy is obviously important. Do you feel like, I don't know. I don't even know what the question is anymore. I got all wrapped up in my own shit, but.
Well, what's your legacy?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know. Maybe still to be determined. But I would say that we try to stay rooted in tradition of Texas barbecue. Like, we try to stay rooted in the method. And I think that's more important than anything else, because that's what makes the actual product. You know, the reason they don't cook the same stuff anywhere else is because they don't have the same wood. They don't have the same atmosphere. They don't have the same meat. So I think staying true to the methods of barbecue kind of keeps us rooted in that legacy. And then, you know, that kind of allows us to reach out as far as we can, because we've still got one foot on the base, you know, one toe on the base kind of. As far as our legacy, LeRoy and Lewis, or my own, I don't know. You know, I would like to hopefully write a couple more cookbooks and have a couple more restaurants and, you know, do... You know, I'm not even 40 yet. I'm turning 40 in July. So hopefully there's plenty more time to talk about that. So, yeah, we're getting there. I'm definitely feeling it.
Here. It goes very quickly. So you got to decide now.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think with your accolades, it gives you a unique freedom that I think a lot of us probably don't have. You know, if I tried to do some crazy shit like that in Tyler, Texas, people would, you know, they'd hate the idea and, you know, probably be like, what are you guys doing? Like, they just want the thing. So is there anything that you've ever done that you feel like people hated the idea, or does it even matter? I mean, you get to kind of do what you want, and that's awesome.
I mean, kind of like yes and no. Like, I would say the only thing I do really miss about the food truck is the kind of flexibility and pliability that it afforded us. Now, if we want to put something new on the menu, it really has to be put through the paces, and we have to make sure we can get enough of whatever it is. We have to have the recipe down solid. The prep team has to know. The kitchen team has to know how to execute it. We have to have enough plates. We have to have enough. Just like, there's so many different elements to getting something out the door than there used to be, because I used to just be able to make something myself and write it on the menu myself and plate it up right there and really have to only communicate it about it to the person who's standing next to me and like punching in the number. So it's a lot more difficult to put something on the menu now, but at the same time, it makes us really, it's like a system of checks. You know, if it doesn't make it past like one hurdle because it's not feasible or it's too expensive or it just doesn't work for one reason or another, then it won't make it on the menu.
So it's not even a matter of it being on the menu and then it, you taking it off, y'all have a process where it may not even make it on there at all before you're like, all right, that didn't work. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, if we have some, you know, you can always tell a new cook's kind of coming in and it's like, hey, what if we do this? What if we do this? What if we do this? Well, first of all, we'd have to order something else in new, you know, we'd have to like, first we can't find any space on the smokers to cook it. So you have to like, this is the stuff that we already have that we produce as like, you know, not necessarily waste, but the things that we have. If you can make a dish out of barbacoa or chopped beef or leftover sausage or something like that, that is what I'm interested in because that's what we have around. That's what's going to make us money and, you know, not have as much waste. And that's where also I think some of the real creativity comes in. You can make something really amazing out of, you know, whatever yesterday's products, then that's even better.
Repurposing.
Evan, besides your restaurants and now the book, what other revenue streams are you pursuing? Are you shipping? Are you doing delivery service, catering? What else are you doing besides walk-up traffic?
We used to do a lot of catering. Now we, during the slower seasons, we do a little bit more. We've kind of changed from doing smaller catering operations to like, we keep raising our minimums. And then like the more we raise our minimums and the larger like clients we attract, and then the, like, those are like really, really worth it. So we're not
for sure,
you know, doing smaller catering jobs anymore. We're only doing like the really, really big ones that make it worth it for us to take all that food out there and have all the staff out there. That it presents its own challenges in its own way, considering we are pretty much full up on the pits most of the time. So it's like if we're doing catering, we got to like steal from yesterday to, you know, have that in like a couple days at this other catering. So that's kind of, that's makes it difficult. So we've been kind of thinking about like, do we go back to a commissary? Do we get like another pit and then rearrange and reschedule everything that we do for smoking barbecue? Or do we like kind of put a storage trailer down there and have some extra storage and prep? Like we don't have too many extra, I mean, like I would say revenue streams. Like we do merchandise, we do okay on that. We have our media kind of arm, which was very active in the food truck, but since we got to the restaurant, it was just really difficult to keep up with. But with the book coming out, we're kind of picking that back up. The biggest one is Mama Fried. So that was our second food truck concept that we opened during the pandemic. And it was supposed to be just like French fries with barbacoa and chili and corn dogs, essentially carnival food. Had that at a bar here called the Armadillo Den. And that's when we discovered that it was, while it's difficult to hire people for barbecue, at least some of the people who are you're hiring there have a lot of passion or are very interested in learning the craft. It's not too much craft behind throwing some corn dogs in the fryer. It's sure does harder taste to good, find though. Like people. I mean, it tastes great, but it's harder to find people who really care about making an excellent corn dog. So we closed that trailer down, but now we do that for ACL, Two Step In, which is a country music festival. We just did it for a Sips and Sounds Fest during South By. So that's really the kind of like, we have like a festival brand. So we don't have to cook barbecue at festivals. We just go and do like French fries and stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
So that was a very smart business decision by Nathan and Sawyer. And it like allows us to pay our taxes every year without really having to worry too much about it. So it's very, very, very helpful.
We kind of started with the star talk and it's a big freaking deal, man. Like it's not something that is glossed over. I mean, you said that you weren't even trying. You didn't even know it was an option, but now it has. It's opened a lot of doors for you. It's a lot of attention. Surely it's a huge motivator for keeping things at a standard, and you know, it feels a certain way now. What happens if you lose the star? Does it matter?
Or is it would matter to us a lot. I think that the reality would be that a lot more people would talk about it than it would actually change anything in the restaurant. Mm-hmm. I can't really imagine that happening right now, because I think we're getting even better and better. I think that, well, I'm not sure exactly how long that the deal was between the Michelin Guide and like Travel Texas was, but I heard it was for 3 years. So we'll see what happens after this coming year, if they like re-up or if they just don't do that in Texas anymore. I don't know. I've never heard of that, but I mean, this is kind of different, because I'm you know, I was about to say that like every restaurant has a birth, a life, and a death, and you got to be ready and plan for the death. But I'm also sitting here with legacy, like multi-generational restaurateur, Wayne Miller. So it's like, you know, you don't always have to prepare for that, but I'm sure that Wayne Louis Miller has become something very different throughout the years when, you know, different members of your family were there. And then obviously probably even just under your reign, it's probably been a very different restaurant depending on what is happening in the economy and, you know, the local economy. So like things will always change. I hope that we can at least carry this restaurant to the end of our lease, which is 10 years. And who knows? Hopefully I won't be too tired of it by then. Hopefully we'll have paid a bunch of debts by then, and hopefully we'll be making some decent money by then. And all that is in more assurance if we keep a star. So
I mean, what you just said is I think a big reality check for anybody that's thinking about getting into the restaurant business, and especially the barbecue business. You know, here you are at the top of your game with the Michelin star, and there's still doubts in your head about whether or not we can make it through the end of the lease. Yeah. And that's a very real concern for probably any restaurateur out there.
Yeah.
You
never know.
It's a brutal business.
Yeah. You never know what's going to happen. We all learned that just a few years ago, man. But yeah, that's crazy. If we lost a star, hopefully it doesn't happen in the next few years. But if we did, hopefully that we will have built a legacy before then, to where we wouldn't need it as much.
I really wish we had had more time to talk to Evan. It was a great conversation. We all kind of separately ended up down in Austin for Evan's book release. Wayne went to go to the friends and family event that Evan talked about. Vic Berry, our producer from Ireland, flew over. He met Wayne and went to that event as well. And I was able to go with Vic to see Evan at the release party at Yeti World headquarters in Austin. Got to see him do a talk, got to pick up a copy of my book and have him sign it. And it's great to see him. And yeah, you guys should pick up that book too. It's amazing. Link in the description, so you can find that book and get a copy for yourself. Next up, we're joined by Arnis Robbins from Evie Mae's Barbecue. The conversation gets into something a little different here. The stress that comes with running a barbecue restaurant at that level, and how you find a way to deal with it before it eats you alive. Some pitmasters take up fishing, some go hunting. Arnis took it a step further. Dude bought an airplane. Here's Arnis on stress, escape, and taking things literally above the smoke. Arnis, I heard that you may have had one of those first bite religious experiences at Wayne's spot back in the day.
Yeah, this is a funny story. I have an aunt and uncle that lived in Bastrop forever. Like, I mean, they're not from Bastrop, but they lived in Bastrop forever. And multiple times throughout the year, but every Thanksgiving, we would travel out there and spend Thanksgiving in Bastrop with them. And I think this was maybe 98. My parents, my aunt and uncle may have told them, hey, there's this barbecue place in Taylor that y'all need to check out. It's called Louis Miller. And it's right, if you go around the north route, you can stop there on the way. Well, we drove from Portales, New Mexico, and that was a pretty good jog, but I think we got there maybe around 2:30-ish. I think 98, 99, Thanksgiving weekend coming up. And there's another joint next to you, right? There's another barbecue joint. It was like all white.
Yes. Or, it was Rudy McKeska's is what it was at the time.
Yeah, so we pull up. We're from Eastern New Mexico. The white building is really pretty. Like, it really got your attention. But Louis Miller's right here in the old basketball gym. So I remember, man, how old would I have been in 98? I was born in 83, 15, 14. But I was in a funk. I was in a mood. I didn't want to get out of the car. I was like, I'll just sit in the car. Y'all can go eat this barbecue if you want. Well, my parents went in, and all your dad had left was a single beef rib, and the crowd was gone. Like, it was, and I think he was going to eat it. I think that was going to be his lunch, and he sold it to my parents, and they came and got me out of the car, and they were like, you have to come try this. Like, you've never had anything like this in your life. And we had never had any kind of real barbecue experience, period. And yeah, I remember having a beef rib at Louis Miller's and just thinking, holy mackerel.
Right.
We all had like two or three bites that fed our whole family. But yeah, and I've told people that story before because I was such a punk and didn't want to get out of the car. And I had no idea that I was in the parking lot of like one of the greatest barbecue cathedrals in the world.
The Cathedral of Smoke, baby.
Right. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It can do things to people.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it does often. One of the cool things about being here in Lubbock is these international students or staff will come out to the restaurant and they cannot speak any English at all. But they'll come back for seconds or thirds. They'll come out to the pit room. They want to see everything after they eat because, again, they've never experienced anything like that. And it's life-changing whenever you feel like you've had really good food. You've had a really good, great steak. You've had a really good seafood. You've had really good sushi. But if you've never had really good, simple barbecue, and a lot of people just overlook it because they think, oh, whatever, it's just barbecue. It will change your life. And we've had opportunities to do that with customers in Florida. And that's cool.
Very.
Because we get an opportunity to do that a lot. And to read some of these reviews that we see online and to see reviews of people that were on vacation and, hey, we found this place on our way to the airport. We wish we would have found it day one. We would have eaten there every day. You know, stuff like that. That's really cool. It is cool to start over. It's been extremely valuable for Wolferth to be really put in perspective 11 years later. My appreciation and respect for what the community here has done for our business is just like, I needed that reality check. So, you know, Florida's brought great stress on me and my family, but it's also brought a great level of appreciation for what we do have and what we've been able to do here.
So, and that is a perfect segue to this because, like I said earlier, if you guys just hang in there, I think it's gonna take off. And I know you can't pay your mortgage with great reviews or hope. And I know that this is stressful. I mean, we have all been through moments where we're trying to build what we have, where it's almost damn near broke us all. Right? It's tiring. There's a lot of fatigue and there's so much damn stress. Like, are you, you know, what, how are you taking care of yourself in this? How much more do you have in the tank before you feel like you're just like, fuck it, man, I thought you'd never ask.
So we opened June of 24. I started traveling to Florida every 10 to 15 days in December of 23.
Yeah.
Rented a house out there. And started, we had to do this whole complete build out and I didn't have a bunch of money. So I was doing a lot of the work myself, working with vendors and carpenters myself, kind of leading the way.
Matt Pittman was helping you, right?
Yeah, right. No, dude, Matt's awesome.
Yeah, of course
he came. We our little soft opening thing, he showed up. They were in town and he showed up. And it's funny when you, like, I don't see Matt the way, I mean, none of us see Matt the way that the world sees Matt.
Right.
But you get that guy in a room full of Southern Alabamans. I mean, it was the, it was the greatest night of their lives to be invited to the soft opening of this barbecue joint. And then Matt Pittman is there just taking pictures and hanging out. So anyway, I start traveling out to Florida to work on this build out and the permitting process. And it's just really hard to do anything out there because the Walton County is really protective of their businesses. Cause I'm sure that they get all kinds of fly by night operators that are trying to come in and take advantage. We opened June 24th. Within about 2 to 3 weeks, I've got this stack of invoices from CapEx build out that I thought, okay, once we open the doors, we're going to have this cash flow. We didn't. We didn't have the cash flow to pay our debt, much less our operating expense. And so from like July of 24 through December, January 24, 25, I was in a funk. I mean, I was in a funk, but I was also every day just trying to figure out how do we get through tomorrow? How do we get through tomorrow? What do we have to do? And so I was out there a lot. I was by myself a lot. And I wasn't like in a bad headspace, but I was also really, really stressed. And I was, I thought that I made the worst decision in the world. And I thought that that decision had jeopardized everything that we had worked hard for, everything that Mallory and my kids had, you know, supported and sacrificed in order for us to build here and all of our employees. I thought that I just threw it all away on this stupid thing. And in January, I was looking at, I was curious about how many flights I'd taken, I think. And so I went back and I looked at how many commercial flights I'd taken to Florida. And it was like 40 round trip flights in a year. And then I just kind of went down a rabbit hole of how much does it cost to get your pilot's license and what kind of airplane would you have to get from Lubbock to Destin? And then I think maybe the next day I was cooking in Wolfert, middle of the night. I'm cooking and I sit down and I go to the app store and I find this flight simulator. And so I'm like trying to take off this airplane on my phone in the pit room and I cannot get this airplane off the ground. Like I just keep stalling and crashing on the runway. And so then I start doing research on how do you fly an airplane? And I ordered some books on Amazon and they came in and Mallory didn't know that I had been looking at airplane stuff. And she was like, what are you doing with this airplane stuff? And I said, I'm just kind of checking it out. Like, I'm just curious about how all this works. And then I started learning about ground school. You can do ground school at home. Like, you can download these ground school programs. They're like $250 and you go through this whole ground school program. So I'm like, at that point I could tell that this was a constructive place that I could focus my attention on instead of sitting around all day wondering, you know, where I'm going to find the next dollar. And so I buy one of those ground school programs and I'm just like, and I'm getting into it and I am learning. And for the first time since high school, I am like listening to lectures online and I'm reading books and I'm just trying to absorb all this stuff. And I still haven't flown in a small airplane. So I go to Google and there's a little flight school out at the airport here in Lubbock. And I called them up and scheduled what they call a discovery flight. Mm-hmm. So a year ago tomorrow, March 3rd, Mallory and I go out and she goes with me to do a discovery flight at the airport. And it scared the crap out of me. Like every little bump, you're just like,
yeah.
And I remember thinking, nah, this isn't for me. Like this adventure stops here. Well, we get back on the ground, we go to lunch and then she leaves to go do her thing. I'm going to go run errands. And I start thinking, man, was it that bad? Maybe it wasn't that bad. Like that was kind of cool. And so I scheduled another lesson. And I think like I never thought that I was going to get my license. I just thought this is just something. It's a distraction. It's a healthy, constructive distraction. And I need that right now. And my confidence was so broke from this massive, terrible decision that I had made that I honestly felt like I had lost myself. At the restaurant, I had always been the confident leader. That whether the decision was right or wrong, I stuck with it and I saw it through and we made it right. And now I was at a point where I didn't trust myself to make any decisions. But whenever I would take a written exam and get a 95 on my written exam, then I'd be like that, you know, a little power up.
Right. Validation. Validation.
Yeah. So I just kept going. I just kept taking lessons until I got my license in October. And then after I got my license, I was like, man, what good's a license if you don't have an airplane? Because now you're having to rent from the rental fleet. And I wanted to get my instrument rating. And that was, I had it in my head, it was going to cost this much to do that. But that's like a year and a half worth of payments. So I could just, so anyway, I bought an airplane.
Oh, shit.
That's the coolest. That's the coolest story of
an airplane.
This is the coolest story of fighting stress and fatigue that I've ever heard.
I'm an eccentric guy, man. So I got an airplane. I closed on the airplane December 8th of last year. I got a 2001 Cirrus SR-22, and flew out with my instructor to Columbia, South Carolina, to pick it up. And we flew from there to Destin, and then Destin to Lubbock. And then we flew it a couple weeks later. We flew from Destin, or from Lubbock to Destin and back. And then I really hit my instrument training hard after the first of the year. So I'm trying to get my instrument rating, and then I'll be good to fly back and forth by myself.
Unbelievable.
So from a cost perspective, it's less expensive than flying commercial?
I can get from...
Or no. Definitely more fun,
but like cost of operation is cheaper than flying commercial. Cost of ownership is not, once okay. That's factored in. But I can fly nonstop as long as I have just no headwind or a slight tailwind. I can get from Lubbock to Destin nonstop,
really,
in like 4.5 hours. Which, I mean, that's a long time to sit there. But if you fly out of Lubbock, everything goes through Dallas. I flew with commercial to Dallas last week, and I sat in Love Field for 4.5 hours on a layover. So, you know, there's value in it. And really, it sounds silly, and it, you know, it's an easy way for me to justify it. But the reality is, if Florida's going to last long term,
right,
it would be great to be able to get there, leave here in the morning, go out there, have a meeting, do whatever I needed to be there for, and either come back same day or come back the next day. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to go to Florida when I needed to go to Florida and not go to Florida because I had scheduled that commercial flight 2 weeks ago. And here it is, but I really don't have a reason to be there. But it would really help if I could be there next week, but I don't have a flight. But that's been great for my mental health. I mean, you learn how to fly an airplane at 41 years old, like after like never knowing anything about it.
I'm speechless right now. I'm seriously, because that's just too cool.
There are a lot of things we were going to talk about. This is not one of them.
No, not at all. Like I had this whole thing. I was going to go down this really dark road about, you know, burnout and like, man, this sucks. And, you know, and now I'm totally amped. I could never do it. My son wanted to fly.
Look how happy I am.
Yeah, you look freaking happy, dude. And last time I saw you, you looked happy at Troubadour. And
that's because I was about to close on my airplane.
Who knew, everybody? Yeah. Not only can you learn to cook barbecue on YouTube and Amazon, you can learn to fly.
That's right. That is, I mean, that is true. I flew, I hadn't gone to Camp Brisket in 4 years because it didn't make sense for me to drive all day Thursday to be there Friday, Saturday, and then drive all day Sunday home. But I flew to Camp Brisket this year. I left here at 5:30 Thursday night.
Yeah.
Got there at 7:15 and was there for the 2 days of, there Friday, Saturday. And then Saturday after the last session, after the life of a pitmaster, the airport's literally right across the highway from the equestrian center, and I was out of there and home by 9:30 that night. Incredible. It was incredible.
So, I mean, I guess you're not freaked out anymore. Like, have you had any moments up there though when you're like, oh my god, what the hell am I doing? It's kind of like the same with opening a barbecue joint in Florida, but like, you're up there and you're like, well, I'm here.
I mean, you kind of, I think everybody in the back of their mind, there's this mentality where you're always kind of like, okay, if I lose my engine here, what do I do? Where am I going to land? Mm-hmm. That's just always there. You're always trying to pick out where you're going to go if this happens. But I don't get too shook up. I flew this morning and it just flying went through this cloud layer and it kind of kicked over. Mm-hmm. Like that would have, I mean, first 2 months of my training, that really would have scared me. But
when you say airplanes over, what exactly?
Well, like it just like a rogue wind Okay. Just kind of a puff, like, okay. You know, so you're just sitting here, everything's cool. And then you're, but airplanes want to fly. They just want to fly. They don't want to fall.
No big deal.
Damn.
So
all in perspective.
I told Mallory, I mean, you can be an airline transport pilot up until 60. I think they force retirement at 60. I told her I'd be a heck of an interview. Like if I going into Southwest, tell them about my work history.
Yeah. So I guess if this barbecue thing doesn't work out, Arnest is going to be a pilot, you guys.
So
good money. I don't know.
I used to joke around that if I wrote a book about my life, an autobiography, it was going to be titled Find Your Barbecue, because barbecue was kind of, I was landscaping and I enjoyed it, but it's like once I started cooking barbecue, I thought this is it. This is what I was born for. This is why I was put on this earth. This comes easier to me than other stuff does. And I'm not afraid of the hard work. It's so rewarding. And I just felt like that I was doing what God had put me here to do. And I still think I am. But I think my second book, chapter 2, post Florida opening, is going to be called Find Your Airplane.
All right, y'all. That's it for this week's Smokeless Podcast. If you enjoy these conversations, make sure you're subscribed. And don't forget, Play or Hate is open. As always, please follow us. Find us on Instagram. It's smokeless_podcast. Send us your barbecue photos. Tag us. Brisket ribs, sausage. Did you have a backyard disaster? Anything you're proud of or brave enough to put in front of us? Tag us. And we just might feature that on the show. The boys will tell you what works, what doesn't, and maybe hurt your feelings just enough to make you your next cook a little bit better. We'll be nice. I promise. We'll try to be nice. And I want to thank Willie Nelson and his amazing elixir, Willie's Remedy. I reached out to them and asked if they could hook us up, and they sure did. So look, guys, got a promo code for you. Smokeless listeners can enjoy 10% off a one-time purchase at drinkwillies.com. Bundles and subscriptions are excluded. The code you're going to use is Stanley's Famous. Again, go to drinkwillies.com, put in the code Stanley's Famous, get 10% off a one-time purchase, and check out what the legend is doing over there. It's pretty good stuff. As always, I speak for myself and Wayne and Justin. We want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.